Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is Alan Sliwa, host of the Lakers pre- and post-game, Lakers Talk and the Sliwa Show. I'm here with Brad Wallace, one of the top personal injury trial lawyers in the game. Brad, tell our listeners why they need to call the Wallace Firm when they get hurt.
Alan, I'll put my courtroom record up against any other lawyer on the radio. We focus on getting our clients top results. You won't see my face on billboards and won't hear me play an annoying jingle. If you get injured, you need a real trial lawyer, not a marketing guy.
Call the Wallace Firm now, 844-844-WINS, or visit WallaceWins.com today.
All right, all this week on 710 ESPN, we're shouting out senior students, giving them a senior spotlight on air. Tonight we have Asia Avenger from Rosemary Academy from Fullerton. Now, you still have time to nominate a classmate or yourself. Email the station, ESPNLAMarketing@ESPN.com, with your name, school, and sport you play. Or post a short video on Instagram or Twitter and include hashtag 710 senior shout out. Asia, I appreciate you being a part of the show. Thank you for taking some time to be a part of Lakers Talk.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, so let me get this right here. So, Orange County Player of the Year, is that am I right on that?
Yes, sir.
Look at you! Look at you! What position? What position do you play?
I'm actually a point guard.
Okay, you're a point guard. By the way, growing up, have you always been a point guard? Is that your favorite position to play?
Yeah, growing up, I was always the shortest kid, so I always had to master my craft and work on little areas and just facilitate the game and just handle the point.
So what do you like about point guard? Do you like getting people set up on the offense? Are you more of a scorer on offense? Are you more of a facilitator, or a little combination of the two?
I would say I'm a combination of the two. Mm-hmm. I like to have the ball in my hands at all times so I can control it and control the pace of the game. So it just makes it a lot easier.
Okay, so can you talk to us about, now you guys won Division I state championship, was it last season?
Yes.
What was that experience like? Just that journey to kind of go through a lot of the ups, the downs, the competition. What was that journey like?
Last year, it was definitely tough because I had to adapt because I was playing for a new team. Mm-hmm. But there were some tough games, and we just kept our head down and kept pushing. Mm-hmm. And we trusted one another. So once we got to that final game, it was all about just treating it as another game. And I would say, just having fun out there.
Are you, would you say out of all the games that you played in high school, is that the game that sticks out most to you because you guys won the state championship?
I wouldn't really say that. I would say I enjoyed every single game equally. And no matter if it was a good game or a bad game, I just look forward to playing every single game with my teammates.
Okay, so how close tell me how this season was going. Obviously, everything stopped, but how was this season going? Where were you guys? Were you on a similar path to potentially winning a state championship again?
Yes, I believe so. And this year, we actually had a tougher schedule, and we had one of the toughest schedules in the whole country. So I think that prepared us for when we went to the playoffs, and we stuck together, and then coming up to that last game, we were all excited to play, but unfortunately, it got cut short.
How much are you keeping in touch with all your friends, your teammates? How much do you keep in touch with them?
Oh, we talk all the time. We're friends, like, outside of basketball, so they're really close with me, and I love them like they're my own sisters.
Hmm. How much do you think that helped you guys, just because you guys have such a good relationship, whether there was basketball there or there wasn't, even though basketball was that bond? How much did it help you guys when you guys were actually on the court because you guys were so close to one another?
We all have great chemistry, and I think that correlated to the floor, and we trusted one another. That was the biggest thing, and we could trust anybody with the ball in their hands, no matter who it was.
You're very polished at this, Asia. Let me just say that you sound very, very professional. Give me your, what happens after high school? Where, where will you, do you already know where you're going? Do you already know what you're going to be studying? Where are you going to go for school?
For school, I'm actually going to San Diego State. My major is currently undecided, but mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to figuring things out once I get there.
All right. Have you spent time in, have you been on campus yet? Have you spent time in San Diego yet at all?
Yes, I have. I've been to the campus about two or three times, and I talk with the coaches and the players all the time, so we really get to know each other.
That's where I went to school, by the way. I went to San Diego State University, so I was excited to see that you're committing to the Aztecs. It sounds like they're going to have a great player. So what so you're undecided right now when it comes to what to study. What are some of your favorite subjects? Like what are certain subjects that you enjoyed in high school that you can see yourself potentially looking at for college?
I definitely enjoyed chemistry and biology and stuff like that. But mm-hmm. I think if I were to go into a major, I would say communications.
Communications? Okay. Hey, looks, we got similar paths here. I did communications at San Diego State. All right.
Yeah, for sure.
So if I can help at all, you know, you just let me know. Okay.
Oh, for sure. I'll be contacting you.
There you go. There you go. I wanted to also ask, so you had mentioned that, you know, you stayed in touch with a lot of your friends, you know, from high school. What has that been like just to have your school year stop the way it did? And I talked to some students last week and I bring up this question, but what has it been to have it just stop the way it did and knowing that, you know, it doesn't look like there's going to be a graduation or prom mm-hmm. or some of those things simply because of the circumstances? What are some of those, I guess you could say, conversations you have with your friends on, not being able to have, you know, something that's incredibly important in your senior year?
I would say it's definitely a big change, not only at school, but just in life in general. Mm-hmm. And the biggest thing is just to adapt to the situation. And now we have online school. Mm. And I mean, I still work out every day, so that's a plus. And it's just, you got to see the good throughout all the bad.
Well, let me tell you, Asia, I think you are well on your way to a not just a successful basketball career at San Diego State University, but you'll be successful in anything you do. I love your mindset. So thank you for joining the show, and congratulations, and wish you nothing but success as you end up graduating high school and you get to college. All right.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
All right. Thank you, Asia. Asia Avenger from Rosemary Academy from Fullerton, and just the Orange County Player of the Year in girls basketball. That's it. Just a D1 state championship last year and was probably on her way to another one, her and her team. Love the stories. Funtius, how cool is this thing, talking to some of these high school athletes? I love it. I really do. I think it's...
Yeah, I think this might have been your better ones, the best better ones.
How polished was she?
She might take your job.
I mean, the way she was answering, what, you know whose job she might take? Somebody in the WNBA. The way she was answering those questions, I mean, she's like, you know,
yeah.
you got times that are down, but you got to find the positive.
Footsteps, too. She's going to San Diego State.
I was taking notes. I was trying to see what advice that she has for me in my life. She should not follow my footsteps. She should just carve her own path, her absolute own path. But that's great stuff there from Asia Avenger. Okay, Shootout is coming up next. Funches has a list of basketball topics that we got to get into, so we'll do that coming up next. By the way, quick reminder, Brian Kamenitsky, BK, coming up at 8:30. Brian's got a great piece in The Athletic. Everybody, a lot of different reporters are talking about their favorite athletes, and I don't want to give up who that athlete is, but it's one of my favorite athletes as well. And, of course, it's a Los Angeles Laker. We'll do that coming up at 8:30. Stay right here. Shootout coming up next with me and Funches. This is Lakers Talk on 710 ESPN. All right, just a quick reminder. Tomorrow, starting at 6 a.m., Keyshawn, Travis, and LZ. Sedano after that from 10 to noon. Will Kane, noon to 3. Mason and Ireland, 3 to 6:30. I'll hop on at 6. We'll do some crosstalk, and then we'll get the Sliwa show going for the rest of the week. So that's Tuesday to Friday. Tonight, Lakers Talk. Brian Kamenitsky coming up at 8:30. Let's do some Shootout. All right, Shootout, presented by the Wallace Firm. Call 844-844-WINS for a free consultation and review of your insurance policy to see if you're eligible for compensation for operating expenses and or lost revenue. This applies to small business owners in general. 844-844-WINS or visit wallacewins.com. Funches, how we doing, brother?
Good, man. Good. All alone at the station here. But,
I know.
You know.
I know. Okay, so paint us a picture. So when you come to work now, what is happening in LA Live?
Nothing. A whole lot of nothing.
Are they all closed now? Like all everything?
It seems to me like all the restaurants, Starbucks, everything is all closed. Not even a soul inside the buildings at all. The only people that are walking around LA Live or whatever, it seems to be ESPN employees or security guards.
How crazy, man. How eerie. Coming in, you know, like, by the way, that's the way it's structured right now, too. Like, you know, you can be there because you're by yourself. All the onboard, on-air, or board ops can be there by themselves or producers. But everybody else is just everywhere else. That's just so crazy to me. This whole thing is I know I told you this earlier, Funches. I think last week, last couple of weeks, I watch a lot of news. You know, I find myself watching a lot of news. But, man, just this predicament, this situation, it's just – it's a trip. Like, you got to remind yourself, like, is this still happening? Yeah, it's still happening.
Yeah, it is crazy. I mean, just to come to work every day and there's, like, no one here. It's like – have you ever seen that movie I Am Legend with Will Smith?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
I feel like him every day.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's do some Shootout.
All right, I don't have any, you know – sounders or whatever, so I'm just getting right into it.
No sounders.
No sounders today. We're just going to get right into the meat and the bones. All right, so Kendrick Nunn believes he should be the 2020 NBA Rookie of the Year, and he's not afraid to let people know it. In an interview with the South Florida Sun Sentinel, the Miami Heat guard said he should be the Rookie of the Year despite Ja Morant of the Memphis Grizzlies having a better year. This is what Kendrick Nunn said. I think people will say that he's the Rookie of the Year, but I don't believe it. The most value should be in the wins. We're both starting guards on teams, and our teams have been holding it down. We're a playoff team, so I go ahead and give that Rookie of the Year to Kendrick Nunn. Alan, does Nunn have an argument about the Rookie of the Year race?
Let me tell you this. I love the confidence, right? That's what you want in your players. If we had a Laker right now, we love the confidence that comes with somebody who's young who thinks they're one of the best. Okay. With that being said, what the hell is he talking about? He is not in the conversation with Ja Morant. Nobody's in the conversation with Ja Morant. By the way, Zion, as fantastic as he is, we know how great Zion Williamson in the limited amount of games that he played. But at the end of the day, Ja Morant has been there every single game. He plays in the Western Conference. His team is in a playoff spot. So I don't know what Nunn is talking about.
I say if the voting was done like in the first month of the season, Nunn would have won it because he came out of nowhere and was just scoring, dropping 25 points a game almost for the Miami Heat. And then it took Ja Morant a little bit, you know, a slower time for him to get to where he is now. But Kendrick Nunn was doing it since the beginning of the year. And he might be right, man. They have more wins than the Memphis Grizzlies.
Think about this. Jimmy Butler's on that team, okay? Adebayo made the All-Star team, too. You got two All-Stars on that team, right? You have Eric Spoelstra, a experienced coach that's won it before. Pat Riley in your front office. You have a lot of help there. Tell me the help that's on Memphis. Who's on there? You know who the best player on that team is?
Ja Morant.
It's Ja Morant.
Yeah, you know, I'm trying to think of a second guy. I can't think of another guy.
Okay, you know where they sit in the West?
Eighth.
They sit eighth. So what's he talking about, a playoff team? You got two All-Stars on your team.
That's true.
And you're in a playoff. Yeah, you're in a good playoff position in the Eastern Conference. Ja Morant's the best player on Memphis. He's doing it by himself. Not by himself, but you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
He's the best player on
every
that
night
team.
Too.
And they're eighth place in the East or in the West. That's impressive.
Now I'm starting to see it now for Ja Morant because every night Ja Morant, every night Ja Morant's the best player on the Memphis Grizzlies. Not every night is Kendrick Nunn the best player on the Miami Heat.
And that's the point, is you got Jimmy Butler, you got Bam Adebayo, like you have other players, you got, what's his name, Dragic.
Yeah.
Yep. You have other players that are there to help you. Who does he have? He's got just young pieces around him. That's it.
Jared Jackson Jr., but I mean, he's been hurt for like the last month or two months. So it's really been John Morant.
Again, and it's not like they're 14th in the West. I would get his argument if they were nowhere in it. They had a better record than the Pelicans, better record than San Antonio, better record than Portland, better record than Sacramento. I'll take Ja Morant all day long over that.
I think I might have to too, man.
That was one of the best pitch jobs I've ever had.
I know, jeez.
It's almost as if I was his PR director.
So Tom Thibodeau thinks he will get another job next season in the NBA, according to the New York Daily News. Tibbs is confident he'll get a job and even has been asking around the league for advice on picking the best opportunity, according to sources.
Okay.
The Knicks, the Nets, the Rockets are expected to have the three highest profile gigs available in offseason, but also keep an eye on the Pelicans, the Bulls, and the Hawks. Now, remember, the knock on Tibbs is that he likes to run his players into the ground.
Yes.
Now, Alan, do you foresee Tibbs getting a job in the league next season?
I feel like he's not going to get a good job if he gets a job. What I mean by that is, like, the Rockets would be a good job. I don't think he's going to get the Rockets job.
Oh, my God. Could you imagine he's going to run James Harden to the ground?
Okay. I don't think he's going to get the Knicks. That would be just an awful partnership. Like, I don't think Thibodeau is going
to
be the guy.
I don't think any established coach should go to the Knicks. I think if you're a young guy and you want to get in the league, that you take the Knicks job.
Well, yeah, I know. But they, you know, that's a mistake by the Knicks. So you got to try and find a more veteran coach. I think if Thibodeau gets another chance, his chance is going to be with a team that has no expectations. Like the Minnesota Timberwolves, when he took that gig, they didn't live up to those expectations. You know, they had Jimmy Butler was there. Carl Anthony Towns was there. Andrew Wiggins was there. Really, they never made any noise. So if he gets back into the league, I don't think it's going to be with one of those teams or those predicaments where you're like, oh, that team's going to compete for a championship.
Like he was a missing link from that championship team or whatever, right?
Yeah, I don't think that will happen. I don't think that will happen.
Yeah, I could see him maybe going to the Nets. I mean, they're always looking for a high profile guy from what we're
But that's a high profile gig. Like that means Kyrie and KD are going to be signing off on that. Because whoever ends up with the Nets, Funches, you know, 200%. Kenny Atkinson got fired, and most thought, well, what did he do wrong?
He was a good coach, too, Alan.
Most thought, what did he do wrong? He didn't do anything wrong. He just came. He was just at the wrong place at the wrong time, where two big-time athletes didn't necessarily probably want him as their head coach.
Very true. And maybe if they were playing, they probably would save his job. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, going on to the next one, David Griffin did an interview with the New Orleans Pelicans official website when he was asked about his roster. Now he said, we have a young group that is here that is exciting. We have a team that is sort of on the cusp of being very good, and it's just scratching the surface of what we're capable of. We're optimistic if we're going to restart in any form or fashion that we're going to be a team that is going to be one to be reckoned with. Now, Alan, will the Pelicans be in the playoffs next season?
Next season. All right, let's think of the West real quick. Let me open up the Western Conference standings here. How long has it been since you've done that?
Oh, at least a month.
Do you know I used to do that like
every day?
Every day.
Me too.
Honestly, like, and I know that's kind of pathetic, but it's the truth. I would, because the West was moving so often, right? So it was a moving target that you were trying to figure out. So it's definitely been a while. By the way, great little beats you're throwing in here. Okay, looking at the West. Who's going to get better? Who's going to get worse? You got to imagine next year, the Lakers, the Clippers, the Nuggets, the Jazz, the Rockets, the Mavs, all of them are going to be back in it. One question is, will the Oklahoma City Thunder just sell everybody off next year, right? Like this offseason.
You think they were going to do that at the trading deadline, but they're in the mix, so they just stuck to their guns.
It's been amazing to watch. They're 40-24. Right? Like, who would have thought that they had a better record than the Rockets?
Not at all.
Okay, so those are six teams, potentially seven, if the Thunder, kind of stay pat with what they have. That leaves one spot open. So, are the Pelicans going to get there over the Blazers?
Over
the Grizz? By the way, Blazers, don't forget they've been injured. They've kind of just had a bad season.
And they might be a seller this offseason, too.
Okay, the Spurs, the Kings, all those. What's the one team I haven't named yet?
The Grizzlies.
The Warriors.
Oh, the Warriors, that's right.
Okay, so if Pelicans get in, who's coming out? So that means Pelicans are going to have to be 16 games over 500 to have a better record than Oklahoma City, or they're going to have to be better than Dallas with Luka and Porzingis. It's no lock the Pelicans are getting into the postseason, because I'll tell you one thing, the Golden State Warriors, that's arguably a top three team in the Western Conference next year if they're healthy.
Yeah, their best bet is just to move to the Eastern Conference.
But what is he supposed to say, right? Like,
yeah,
he's supposed to say, we don't have a shot. He's got talent too. I know what he's saying.
Let's just say they don't make any changes at all. You know, you look at that roster from 1 to 12, it's a deep, talented roster full of good young players.
It is, you know.
And they also have like a mix of veterans too, with J.J. Redick, Jrue Holiday, and then you got Zion and Brandon Ingram. So it's like a good mix.
Lonzo on that team, Josh Hart. They got talent, but I would be more surprised if they got in than if they didn't. And I know that sounds crazy, but people can't forget that the Golden State Warriors next year are not just in the postseason, are going to make noise. So unless one of these teams in front of them go on a selling spree, unless the Thunder just go sell off all their players, but they could very well be the ninth best team in the league, and that's without Portland getting in. So
very true. Very true. So going on to my next couple questions, or actually State Warrior questions. So First one, Golden State Warriors owner Joe Lacob was on a TK podcast with Tim Kawakami of The Athletic and admitted what most of the NBA community thought the Warriors could do in a 2020 NBA draft, which is trade down. Mm-hmm. Now, this is what he said. He said, we're going to look at all the scenarios. Honestly, I'm not going to hide this. We're going to look at the drafting someone at our position. Maybe we trade down. That's a possibility. I'm not saying it's preferred or not preferred. I'm just saying it's something we have to look at. Allen, is a smart move for the Warriors to trade out of the top spot of the 2020 draft?
This is the question. The question comes down to this. Is your team in a position right now to where you have a chance to compete for an NBA championship, or does it not? So if you don't have a chance to compete for a championship, there's very good likelihood, strong likelihood that you don't trade down, right? You keep that pick because you're rebuilding. What do you think the Warriors, what position do you think they're going to be in next season?
They're going to be back.
I agree.
Back to the Warriors we knew.
I mean, they're going to have Steph, Clay, Draymond, Andrew Wiggins, whether you keep him or you don't keep him, and if he doesn't work, you can shop again.
I think he's a perfect fit for that team anyway.
I do too,
by the way. If Andrew Wiggins is your fourth best player on a championship, that's great. That's awesome.
If he's your fourth best player and all of a sudden there's structure, there's an organization that has shown we know how to, you know, crop young players, you're going to have a specific role, you can't ask for a better position if you're Andrew Wiggins and you're getting paid.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So now it comes down to, I'm not saying you give up that draft pick for nothing, but damn, if that takes you over the top where you have another 2-year run where you have a chance to win another two championships, wouldn't you do it?
Yeah. I mean, there's talk that, you know, most mock drafts have them at number one, and they have them taking Anthony Edwards, a guard from Georgia, who's pretty much a 6'6 guard who could be like Klay Thompson, you know? Like, Jesus. He doesn't have the shooting ability as Klay, but still. Why are you going to draft another guy at 6'6 and, you know, play the same position as your second best player?
Especially when Clay's going to be around in the league for another 5, 7, 8
exactly,
years. Whatever.
Exactly.
Like however amount of years he's going to be in the league. So that's kind of the point I'm making is, would I be surprised if they trade that pick to be competing? Man, it's good to talk basketball again.
Right, exactly.
How good does this feel to like actually look at standings? Like you ask me real basketball questions. I think makes a lot of sense for them to, you know, to look at their predicament, their opportunity, and know they're trying to win right now. It's almost similar to the Lakers. Maybe this isn't a good example, but Lakers traded every young asset they had. Why'd they do it, Funch?
They needed to get Anthony Davis.
They needed AD to try and win right now.
And he's a top five player, too. A top five player in the league.
They needed to try and win right now, and I think the Warriors are in a similar position.
Yeah, but they also could go after a guy named James Wiseman who could be the center of the future for them because, I mean, Steph and Clay, they're not going to get any younger, but you might want to keep this team going for another 5 or 6 years, you know?
By the way, you're right about that, and that is definitely another approach that they can take, and that is definitely something that, you know, they're higher ups, the guys making all the big-time money to make those decisions, you know they're thinking about that too, saying, okay, can we find somebody in this draft that can then carry the franchise for the next 10 years?
That can help us now and carry the franchise for another 10 years.
The only thing I say to that is, you know, just think about that opportunity to win championships. They're not easy to come by. And if you're in a window, which they're in that window right now, where you got a shot to win, I would think that they, you know, look to shop it or they look to trade down. But we'll see what they end up doing.
All right, going on to my next Warrior question. On this day in 2016, not only is this a four-year anniversary of Kobe, this is a four-year anniversary of the Warriors becoming the first NBA team in history to get 73 wins in a regular season, surpassing the 96 Bulls' 72 wins. But the record got overshadowed, Alan. You know why? Because they lost in the NBA Finals to the Cavs that year. They gave up a 3-1 lead.
I say this real quick with Michael. Some of the pregame shows, we'll have conversations about, you know, that 73-win team. And he always says the same thing you just said there, Funch. Like, what does it mean? It doesn't
mean
matter.
Nothing.
Right? Because they lost against the Cavs. But keep going.
Okay, so my question is, will this Warriors team go down as the greatest team not to win a title?
Greatest team to not win a title. Interesting. Greatest team to not win a championship. I don't think so. I'll tell you why not, because I think, you know, when the Lakers and the Celtics were both competing for championships, one of those two teams had to lose, right? And they had Hall of Famers just littered. When Kobe and Shaq lost and Karl Malone and Gary Payton was on that team, I don't know if they'd be considered the greatest. I mean, the greatest team to lose, I don't think so. I think there are other great teams that lost as well, and some of it had to do with the competitions, some of that had to do with injuries, whatever the case is.
And you also got to look at the Karl Malone, John Stockton, Utah teams that went to the finals versus the Bulls. They lost. They never won a championship. Also, the Knicks with the Patrick Ewing, the Charles Oakleys, the Anthony Masons, that they were stacked. They never won anything.
Let me tell you something. I was talking to a cousin of mine yesterday. I called. And just to wish him, you know, a happy Easter. And we're having a conversation. Sports comes up, and he's saying, "Do you know how many? You know how many athletes didn't win a championship because of Jordan?" And we started listing them. We started talking about it, right?
Yeah. So,
Charles Barkley, Sean Kemp, Clyde Drexler, Karl Malone, John Stockton, Patrick Ewing. Think of all these greats that never won a chip because they happened to play the same time.
I think I saw a staggering stat too recently, Alan. It was like six or seven members of the Dream Team didn't win a championship because of Jordan.
How about that? That's why when they say, you know, the greatest of all time, 6-0 in the finals. Won a three-peat, took 2 years off, and then came back and won another three-peat. How good is this Last Dance documentary going to be coming up on?
It's on Sunday. I can't. It's going to save us. Save us from the horse and the bad video games.
You know what? It's going to be incredible, I think. I really think it's going to be incredible. I'm going to do some, I think, post-game commentary to it with Sedano. We're going to do on the ESPN LA Twitter.
Nice.
But I got to be honest, man. What a... It's going to be an incredible – if all the sports were going on right now, if playoffs were happening, if NFL was on, Major League – it doesn't matter what sport was on. That documentary coming out is everything. And for it to come out right now where we're all so hungry for new content, it's going to be amazing.
That's all I got for you, Alan.
All right, Funches. Thank you, brother. Brian Kamenitsky coming up at 8:30. And his favorite player with the Los Angeles Lakers. I set this up because that's what they're doing on The Athletic right now. One of my favorite players to ever play for the Lakers as well. I'll tell you who that is coming up next. Stay right here. This is Lakers Talk on 710 ESPN. All right, we'll go until 9 o'clock tonight. Brian Kamenitsky coming up in a few minutes. Just a reminder, tomorrow, Sliwa Show will be on 6 o'clock. I'll do Crosstalk with Mason Ireland and then all week till 9 o'clock. So I thought this was interesting. A couple days ago, this actually came out, and I was like, let me save this for Lakers Talk. So Athletic right now is doing their favorite players, and it gives them an opportunity. It's not just basketball. It could be about any athlete, any sport. And Brian BK did a piece on his favorite player being Powell. So I wanted to take some time, and I'll have BK come on, and we'll talk about it. But for Brian Kamenitsky, and I kind of put this for myself, I don't want to say Pau Gasol is this isn't the right way to put it. I don't want to say he's underappreciated as a Laker fan. I don't think that's the case, but I think there's so many amazing Laker greats that he falls further down the list. So when you talk about great Lakers that you remember, it's easy to remember Kobe and Shaq and Magic and Kareem and Worthy, and you just kind of keep going down the list. Wilt Chamberlain, Jerry West, you go down the list of all the Laker greats. And I don't think Powell's name gets brought up a lot. And I like that Brian brought him up, because I know one day we're going to get that opportunity where Pau Gasol's jersey is hung at Staples Center. It's retired. And we all get to give him the credit that he truly, truly deserves. I think some of the things when I think of Pau, first of all, you had to appreciate his game before he even became a Los Angeles Laker when he was in Memphis. Just his style of basketball. I mean, what a smooth style of basketball. The fundamentals, just the touch that he had, the ability to use his right hand, ability to use his left hand, that European style of basketball, a big man that can hit an 18-footer. You know, you had to appreciate what Pau Gasol brought to the table. And then all of a sudden, he came to the Los Angeles Lakers, and you were looking around like, what happened? How did we get Pau? Who did we trade? Who cares who we traded? Is it official? Yes, it's official. Let's roll. Lakers got a shot now to win some chips. They get to the NBA Finals 3 years in a row. They win 2 of 3. But Pau, I think, is also probably not known enough for what he used to do off the floor. He was a huge advocate. I used to always remember this. Huge advocate to Children's Hospital of Los Angeles, CHLA. You felt like there were always positive stories about Pau. And from a fan perspective, how could you not like Pau? I mean, Pau, didn't it seem like he was the nicest guy in the world, right? So even from a competition perspective, we're all watching games. We want our team to win. We want them to, you know, demolish the other team. And then there's Pau, seems like the nicest guy. So from a basketball perspective, that competitive perspective, you felt like with the Lakers, it kind of started coming to a different form. You know, that player that might have been considered, oh, he's too soft of a big man, or he's all finesse, he's all touch, but there isn't that other side of him that is needed from that position. And if the Lakers are going to win a championship, and don't get me wrong, just an unbelievable, beautiful style of basketball. For someone like myself, who genuinely enjoys basketball, he's the type of player that I appreciate watching, because he's got those, you know, fundamentals down, and it's everything that he does that you can appreciate. But I thought the moment him and Kobe linked up, now all of a sudden you got everything you enjoyed about Pau, but to another level. Because on the basketball court, he was a winner. On the basketball court, he was going toe-to-toe with KG, Kevin Garnett, in the NBA Finals to try and win that NBA championship in 2010. You can make an argument that he could have been a finals MVP in 2010. That's how good he was playing. That's how good Pau Gasol was for the Lakers. Now, when I also look back on it, you had great role players for the Lakers: Lamar, Bynum, D-Fish, Sasha, Mehta, Ariza. They were on two different teams, but one was 2009, one was on 2010. You loved all the role players for the Lakers, but you knew it was Kobe's team. And then there was that in-between slot that I think Pau Gasol fit into. That in-between slot where he definitely was better than every role player, so he wasn't a role player, but he also definitely wasn't Kobe Bryant. So he kind of sat right in between that. And I thought he played it to a perfect, perfect tee. And when I saw Brian Kamenitsky's article in The Athletic, I wanted to give him a chance to kind of come on. And he's going to have a different perspective, because – he covered Pau. I did not. So, you know, my role that I have now, Lakers Talk that I've had for, I think actually this week is 4 years now we've been doing Lakers Talk. I wasn't in a role where I was able to cover these players, or at least cover Pau. So Brian Kamenitsky did. BK coming up next. We'll talk about Pau Gasol, why that was his favorite player, and also his thoughts on Kobe's final game. What this game meant to him and what that game was at that time for him. We'll do all that coming up next. Stay right here. This is Lakers Talk on 710 ESPN. All right, appreciate you guys tuning in. We'll go till 9 o'clock. Like I mentioned, Brian Kamenitsky joining Lakers Talk. What's going on, BK?
Oh, not much. Busy social calendar, you know. Out one night here, out another night there. You know, it's hard to keep track of all the obligations and places to be right now.
I know, BK. Well, you went out of your way. You made some time. That's always appreciated.
I did.
You know, it's funny. So last week, I go to The Athletic, and I look up, and I know you guys have been doing a little bit of this where you're choosing your favorite player, and I think there's even been, like, specific games that were your favorite game that you've covered. Mm-hmm. So yours stuck out to me for a couple of reasons. Number one, I love the player that you picked. And number two, I don't want to say that he's underappreciated. Like, I think that's too harsh to say that, but it's just that the Lakers have so many greats. You know, sometimes Pau Gasol's name doesn't get mentioned in any of those conversations, and I understand why. It's justified. But the fact that Pau was your favorite player, I loved it because, you know, he truly was such an amazing piece of the Lakers the years that he was here and a big part of those two championships. Why was Pau your favorite player?
Well, there are a few things. And, you know, first of all, thank you for subscribing. But also, I think, you know, when it comes to Pau, he's fascinating in a lot of ways. First of all, he was one of the mm-hmm. Most exceedingly nice, kind, genuine human beings that I've ever been around. Like, you know, whether professionally, personally, he's just an excellent human being, which I think mm-hmm. deserves, you know, a little bit of praise. But also, too, you know, beyond that, I mean, I've covered a lot of, like, good and decent and kind people in sports. I've been very lucky in that way. What he represented around the Lakers to me was always fascinating because, you know, he was clearly an ingredient, like the ingredient that the Lakers needed to go from really good to championship caliber, you know, to go to three straight finals and all that. And, you know, I think now 10 years later, when we're kind of past the 2010 championship, people forget just how good Gasol was at his peak. And you go back, mm-hmm. I mean, it's worth looking up the stats, looking up the highlights and all that. He was remarkably skilled. And so, and just a perfect pairing for Kobe on the floor with the passing ability, with the mid-range game, the rebounding, an underrated defender in his prime. All of that stuff that matched up so well with Kobe and the skill level at a time where we weren't quite at the place where, like, every big man has that kind of total floor game and, you know, Nikola Jokic and all these guys where we kind of expect it from these from bigs. Pau was on the front wave of that. And so, you know, he was incredible fun to watch. And then, you know, Alan, when you go back and you remember those teams, like what he went through with the Lakers, it wasn't like this, you know, cushy, everything is great kind of deal. You know, he was almost traded twice. And even when things were going good, he was always the lightning rod for when things went wrong. He had Kobe throwing shots at him. He had Phil throwing shots at him. He was soft. He was black swan, white swan. He was all of this stuff. Some of which, you know, he needed to kind of get that push a little bit. And Kobe played all these games and a lot of them were very effective. But I think Alan, too, he was always kind of a referendum on what we wanted and needed and expected out of our athletes in a Kobe-centric town, where Kobe set that bar of what your stars are supposed to be. They're supposed to be killers. They're not supposed to be nice. They're not supposed to be kind. They're not supposed to be finesse. They're not all of these things that, you know, Pau was kind of this avatar for. That I found it fascinating to be around that team and have that storyline to cover.
How is he in general with the media? Just how you had a great example of a story, and I'll let you tell it, but it was in the locker mm-hmm. room. How maybe you could tell that specific story.
Sure.
And then in general with the media.
Overall, he was, you know, all of these guys have their moments where they're not as, you know, they're not into it. They're not in the mood, whatever. Pau was overall just one of the most accommodating, friendly people. He understood what we were there to do. He was polite. He was patient. He was fun, especially when he was off the record, you know, just a fun guy to talk to. But I mentioned that kindness before, and this is the story that you're alluding to. There was a time, there's a woman who is a regular member of the media, covers the Lakers and covers LA sports, who works from a wheelchair. And Gasol, like most basketball players, does his interviews standing up because it's one of the few advantages of being 7 feet tall. Like in everyday life, it sucks probably. But in the locker room, it's good because you can kind of stand above the microphones. Everybody's shorter than you. And it takes a situation that isn't claustrophobic and makes it, or that could be really claustrophobic, makes it a little less. So he always did his interviews standing up, post game, at practice, whatever. This particular game, the reporter that I mentioned is next to his locker waiting for him to come out of the shower and get dressed and all this stuff. Pau comes out, sees her, doesn't say anything, doesn't make a big deal, doesn't say, you know, do you want me to say, just sits down for the interview so she can have easier access with, you know, and be able to get her recorder closer to him to get the sound that she needs. Didn't say a word. Done with it, goes, whatever. And I noticed that I haven't been around the guy for 4.5. I've never seen him sit down for an interview. And, you know, I asked him about it a couple weeks later, like, hey, is that why you did it? And he just said, yeah. And that was it. And, you know, and this isn't like, oh my God, a professional athlete noticed that and did the courtesy and all. This is just, it was a remarkably empathetic, human, kind thing to do. And that was the kind of guy that Pau was when he was playing in Los Angeles and, you know, remains to this day, obviously. But that moment really struck me as just a moment of kindness that you don't always see in the world that we work in.
Brian Kamenitsky obviously does a ton of work with ESPN LA, also The Athletic. BK, what do you think that's going to be like the day that Pau gets his jersey retired at Staples Center? What do you think that will not just mean for him, but I think that will put the icing on the cake of his true recognition for LA and for Laker fans?
Yeah, I think it'll be a validation that he deserves. I think the way that Phil and that Kobe got the most out of him and helped him get the two titles that he won as a Laker and, you know, the three finals and the performances that he put in. I think it, like you said earlier, Alan, it kind of undercut a little bit of what we think of him, how good he really was, but he's going to go in the Hall of Fame. I do agree with you. He's going to have his jersey retired. And I think the fans will love it. I think they'll appreciate it. Honestly, the only thing that's bittersweet about it is the guy that really should have the microphone there to introduce Pau to the Staples Center crowd that night should have been Kobe. And it won't be, obviously. And that will be something that is sad. It's a reminder. It will be another reminder that he's gone and that. But in terms of a celebration of Gasol and a validation of his time in L.A., I look forward to it. I think it's going to be just a fantastic night. But we got to wait a while because he's still active. So it's going to be a few years.
So just staying on what you just referenced right there, today was the four-year anniversary of Kobe's final game, puts up the 60 points against the Utah Jazz. What do you remember? I mean, what kind of – everybody has their own different personal story. I was reading a ton of tweets, took some calls on it as well. What do you remember about that night? It could be maybe during the game. It could be after the game. But what stands out to you most?
What's funny is I think most people there just hoped that it wouldn't be bad. You know, like just give them like a good game, like, you know, 8 of 17, you know, 9 of 20, you know, 9 of 21, 26 points, something like a good box score, a couple good highlights. And he went out, and I mean, what I forget off the top of my head, Alan, but like he missed like 8 of his first 10 shots. I mean, he was
something
terrible
like that.
At the beginning.
Yeah, I think he missed his first seven too, and then probably 8 of 10, something like that.
And then from there, you're like, oh bleep, like this could be a disaster. Like, just the worst way for somebody like Kobe to go out. And when it turned, so many things about that night become incredible and unfathomable and just the most amazing bit of theater. Like he took 50 shots, Alan. 50. Like if you'd have asked Kobe before that game, Are you capable still of taking 50 shots in an NBA game? Mm-hmm. He'd have said, you bleeping bleeper are insane. There's no flipping way. He wouldn't have said flipping. I can do that. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, 50 shots, like you go up in the gym, whoever's listening, you can find, go in your backyard right now. Nobody can go to the gym. Stop go to your backyard. Right? Do 50 NBA moves, dribble, whatever, 50 shots. You are winded. Like you, sure. And that's not against NBA competition. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so you get to this thing and he's just piling up these points. He gets to 30, gets to 40, gets to 50, and people are just going insane. And, you know this, Alan. These were not happy days around Staples Center. They won 17 sure. games. That was the 17th win of the year. And, Kobe didn't have a good year. He was, he really wasn't the same guy after the Achilles thing. And, it was the only just pure moment of unbridled joy that Staples Center had since game 7 of 2010. And it was amazing. And all these people coming out afterwards, and it wasn't a real game. And it was, they were letting him shut up. It was awesome. And if you couldn't get into it, it revealed a part of your soul that was dead. And I was so angry at those people the next day because it was an amazing night. If I hadn't witnessed game 7 in 2010, it would have been the most remarkable game I'd ever covered.
I mentioned this to Mason in Ireland, and we were chatting a little bit about it. So it was so different too, right? Because coming into game seven, first of all, Lakers-Celtics, you were Laker fans are nervous. They're tense. They have mm-hmm. What if you lost the final game and you lost two championships to the Celtics and this one would have been on your floor? It was a completely different setting, I guess you can say. For Kobe's final game, it was just a celebration. That's it. There's no other way to put it. This was supposed to be a celebration for Kobe Bryant. And outside, it was a celebration. The fans knew it was a celebration. Funches had mentioned to me earlier, it was just under $1,000 to just get into Staples Center. So, the hype.
They call that Sliwa money.
Yeah, something like that, right? So the hype was obviously growing and growing. And then it not just delivered. Like, if Kobe put up 30 points in his final game, I'd be like, how amazing awesome. Is that? How amazing 30. Is that? Guy puts up 60, BK. 60.
He didn't even stop at a nickel, Alan. He just kept going. And, he's shooting. Like, he's making three-pointers. And, everything about it was just, I don't care. He shoot 50 times. Utah's not playing, they're not double-teaming him. They're not trying. It doesn't matter if they win anymore. Like, by the way, 5 days before that, Utah was still playing for a playoff spot. It might even have been closer. Can you imagine what that game would have been if Utah had to win? Thank God that didn't happen. All of that stuff. It's like, I don't care if nobody's guarding you. He's an old guy by NBA standards playing on broken legs.
Incredible.
If in an empty gym, make enough of those shots, those three-pointers, to go score 60 points.
No,
nothing about this, everything about it was amazing.
It was
incredible to watch, and there was just happiness.
And it was, one of those moments, too, I think you mentioned, just kind of the years that the Lakers have been having. So it was obviously something that they could be positive about. I'll ask you this final mm-hmm. question. Last Dance, this Sunday will be the premiere. That's the Bulls documentary. How much are you looking forward to this? Is this right down your avenue, or is this you think overhyped, or this thing's going to deliver? I think it's going to be amazing, but just your thoughts on the documentary.
Well, it's funny. I'm going to watch it because I mm-hmm. hear it's really good. And all of the 30 for 30, this whole series is there's no duds in any of it. Any story that any story that you don't know, they always do such a great job, telling these things. And supposedly the amount of information and detail and stuff they've gotten this is just incredible. And so I'm excited because there's the quality that this is going to live up to. And then the vacuum that it's filling right now, it's going to be like, Alan, when people would get together to watch People versus OJ or, mm-hmm. The ESPN's edition of that, the documentary, again, just same 30 for 30 series. It's going to be awesome. I'm excited to learn things about this era because I wasn't a huge basketball fan during the Jordan era. So there's mm-hmm. a lot that I'm going to learn here and see. So I'm there. I'm into it. And I will listen to the wrap up show with Alan Sliwa and that other guy. And I'm excited about it. I don't know why. Why do you need another guy? Why is this? You don't work with other people.
Listen,
you know what they say about you at the station is Alan doesn't play nice. He doesn't work with other people.
Something
He's
like that.
He's a loner. He's a rebel. He's excited like that he has to work from home. He doesn't have to see Funchess, doesn't have to see Jesse, doesn't have to see any of these people. He can just work from home. You don't have anybody looking him in the eye in the studio, which he hates. Don't look Sliwa in the eye. And that's Mr. Sliwa.
Look away.
And so, like, he's really, my understanding is you're really leaning into the pandemic. And so I don't know why you're using that other guy. Like, what's he doing? He only hosts 2 hours. You host 2.5.
This is setting up for. That's a great setup there, BK. That's a great setup for Sunday.
The name of the show should be the post game show with Sliwa and the other guy.
This is what's funny about like just kind of this whole thing. I've never done one of these. I know you guys were doing. You did the horse thing yesterday, right? What was the one you guys? Uh-oh. Oh, you guys did one of the games prior to that, right? You guys did one of the. You guys did commentary during one of the games.
We did. Are you talking Lakers Celtics?
Lakers Celtics, and then we did the horse tournament yesterday.
That was tough. The Lakers Celtics thing was easy because like you can talk about the game, you kind of riff back and forth, and you go back to the game. Horse did not give us a lot to work with. Horse was disappointing. Horse, we had to do a lot of heavy lifting to keep our audience in. Like, imagine if you tried to do a radio show where you were just playing horse. You'd have trouble keeping an audience because that's not a visual thing to do on the radio. It was about that good on TV. So it was a struggle. But we did okay, you know. People are jonesing for anything with a basketball in it.
No, I don't blame you. I don't blame you. I like that you guys brought Om on. You brought Ben on. Ben was actually taking shots outside. That's a good way to do it. That's a creative way to do it.
He was horsing. He was horsing around. Ha!
I love it.
You see what I did there?
I love it. I saw exactly what you did. All right. In The Athletic right now, Ryan Kamenitsky's got
a great thing
on Pau Gasol. BK, thank you, buddy.
All right. Thanks, Alan. Appreciate it.
All right, man. Appreciate it, man. Have a good rest of your night. All right. That's Brian Kamenitsky right there. Okay. So we didn't even get to do this. Funches and I still got our Power 5 left. We're going to do that when we come back. We'll highlight some of the greatest performances in their final professional game ever. Believe it or not, there's actually some pretty damn good performances out there. So we'll do that coming up next. You can hit me on Twitter at Alan Sliwa. Plus one other thing, Funches, keep this one in mind. If we did play, I saw this question come up on ESPN LA yesterday on Twitter. Who would win in a horse game if we just did the peeps, right? Just the on-air talent. Save your answer. I want to talk about that coming up next. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. All right. Thank you to Michael Thompson, Brian Kamenitsky. As always, we appreciate doing the high school scholar athlete tonight. It was Asia Avenger from Rosemary Academy from Fullerton. So appreciate all the guests that joined the Sliwa or joined Lakers Talk. I have trouble with that sometimes now, Funches. I'm getting accustomed to saying the Sliwa Show, but I gotta kind of isolate this. This is Lakers Talk tonight. So, Funch, you mentioned that you watched the horse game yesterday, right?
Yeah, I saw some highlights. Yeah.
You saw some of the highlights. So yesterday they put out on Twitter, ESPN LA did, saying who would win in a horse competition. And instantly, of course, that's down my alley here. I mean, I can't tell you how much I love basketball, and what's better than horse? Like when you're actually playing it, you're playing it with your buddies or whatever the case is. So if you had to look at some of these ESPN LA talent, who would be the toughest ones to beat? And I'm talking about just the ones that, you know, I think they were just looking at the on-air lineup, right? Like they weren't looking at Ben Lyons or Michael Thompson or something like that. Who are the I know Ireland's a good basketball player.
Yeah, I've heard stories about him. I've heard he's a gunner, though. Like, he's a chucker.
He's a chucker. Okay,
He's the white Mamba. I hear he's a white Mamba.
Okay, so Ireland is
taking 50 shots that game.
Okay. So Ireland, you know, we're playing a horse game. Okay, who else? I think LZ.
LZ? I heard LZ's a baller, too, because I've talked to him about, you know, he goes out and plays ball somewhere else, you know,
but
wherever.
You think LZ's a shooter? You think horse plays to his game?
I think he's more of
you think he's like a hustler?
I think he's a hustler. Yeah, if I had to guess, you know, he's in shape, but I don't know. I haven't seen his form or anything like that. So I'm just guessing he's a defensive guy, a hustler or whatever. Gets in your face and just plays defense.
Okay, so Travis then, I think Travis is an athlete. Like, I could see Travis just coordinated, right? He's an athlete. Do you think Keyshawn can shoot?
Man, I don't know. You know, some of those, you know, former NFL guys are really good at basketball, man.
And then some of them are not at all.
Yeah, they never touch a basketball.
There's there's like no between. There's no in between in that. So I got to be honest here. I hope they do a game.
Yeah.
How great would that be? And I want to get some shots up against everybody
else. I'm probably not going to put any money on Sedano or Mason.
Put your money on Slee. Put your own money on me.
I got you, man.
I think I could. By the way, I've never seen Ireland
confidence.
Play, so it could very well be Ireland. But you know, that's kind of down my avenue. All right, so we just got a few minutes for this. Let's get that Power Five music going. Okay, so simple enough. This is what we decided. And to be honest with you, we don't even have to rank them in five. But these are some of the best performances in their final professional game. Kobe, it was his four-year anniversary of putting up 60 against the Utah Jazz. So give me some that stand out to you, Funch. What's one or two that stand out to you?
Well, it's funny because I had like a top five, and like four of them are football players. Because it seems like those guys have like the best last game.
Who's give me one or two that are
Michael Strahan, first of all, his last game was defeating the undefeated Patriots in the Super Bowl.
And I think he was actually a part of that. You know, sometimes some of these guys can just be in the game because they've been in the league for so long.
Oh no, he was a part of the action. I think I was looking at the stats. I think he got like a couple sacks in that game.
All right, so that's a good example. Give me another football player. That's a good example.
John Elway. He's probably number one on my list. He went out with back to back Super Bowls.
I mean, come on now.
You can't beat that, Alan.
Back-to-back Super Bowls. That's right. That's how we went out. And he played 16 or so years, whatever the
case is. He was MVP in that last Super Bowl he won, too. So, like, that's, you can't do that any better.
That's picture perfect. Like, all these players that end up in the league for so long, that's a picture perfect way to go out. And we know there's so many great players that don't go out that way. Like, if Tom Brady, let's say, won a Super Bowl in his last game, let's say his sixth Super Bowl.
Yeah.
He won a Super Bowl.
Like, he just retired after the Rams Super Bowl.
If he did that, just imagine his final game is a Super Bowl. It's six Super Bowls and then it's over. But most of them don't do that. You know what I mean?
Not even that. But what if MJ never came back to play for the Wizards?
There's an even better example.
Like, that's like the number one of all time. You know, game winning shot to win NBA championship. Beat that.
I'm done. Appreciate it, guys. You guys go have a great life. You know, like, that's literally would have been Jordan. Okay, there's one that I read too. Pete Sampras's last match, his last professional match, was against Andre Agassi, and he won the U.S. Open final.
Oh, I remember that I remember that.
Can't get any better than that. They have a list. David Robinson.
Yeah, that's right.
A double-double, 13 points and 17 rebounds. That was his final game six. This was, I forget what year it was, but it was after they beat the Nets. So there's some unbelievable performances, and that just goes kind of in conjunction with what we were doing with Kobe tonight. So appreciate everybody that called into the show and also sent us all those tweets. So that's our Power Five for tonight. We're back at it tomorrow morning, Keyshawn, Travis, and LZ. If you missed any part of the show, download the Lakers Talk podcast on the ESPN app or on iTunes. I mentioned this a little bit earlier as well. The Sliwa Show back on tomorrow, the rest of the week. So Tuesday all the way through Friday from 6:30 to 9 o'clock. You could tune into that, and Crosstalk starting at 6 o'clock. All right, LA, greatly appreciate you guys tuning in. Have a great rest of your night. We'll get back at you tomorrow.